Welcome to Take a Wonder with Shebs, the show that features some of the biggest travel bloggers, TV and radio personalities, and journalists from all around the world. Each show aims to take my guest on a wonder and uncover topics that may not be discussed on their platforms or in the media, whether that's the state of travel blogging and journalism as it is today, or whether there's enough diversity within the industry. Perhaps what impact technology and social media have had on content creation, or in general the impact of current affairs on the industry. I also try and find out the journey behind each individual's success, as this is more important to me than the actual travel. My guest at this point is documentary filmmaker and award-winning photographer, Bella Fork. Bella, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on. How are you? And where in the world are you currently?
I'm very well, thank you. And I am at home in London.
So just for people who don't know who you are and what you do, just explain a little bit about yourself.
I am a documentary producer, director. Mostly I make science and history documentaries for international channels. The last few years, US channels like Discovery and PBS. I'm also, in my spare time between documentary projects, a travel writer and a travel photographer. And I have a travel blog at passportandpixels.com.
I always build it up for our viewers and listeners to sort of understand the person behind where you are right now. Where did the initial love first start for you for travel? And also, what was your ambition growing up? Was it in photography, but what you do now? Was it in filmmaking?
I've always been interested in travel and I've always been interested in photography. Like when I was very small, I did photography clubs and I made a dark room in my mum's laundry room. I put bin bags on the windows and, you know, I had a pinhole camera kit and I was the kid who would bring a camera to school on, you know, on school on certain days and take pictures of my friends and that sort of thing. So I've always been into photography as a hobby, you know, since I was quite small. And the travels, the same, you know, I kind of just always loved going to places. When I was lucky that, you know, my parents could afford to take us on holidays, so we'd go to places and obviously they were the best. And I took a gap year after I left school and traveled around South America. And then I studied languages at university. So again, I got to travel, spent a 6 months working in Paris and 6 months studying in Granada at the university in Spain.
Was it solo traveling to South America when you took a gap year?
I went on my own, but I went supported. So I went with a project organization, you know, so there was someone on the ground to help. And there were other people sort of my age doing the similar project. So I kind of had a group of friends ready made. But when I went to the airport, I didn't know anyone, if you know what I mean. I studied languages and I kind of thought I wanted to use my languages in some way, which didn't actually happen straight away because I ended up working at the BBC and doing, you know, UK based stuff. But I always at that point thought I wanted to get paid to travel effectively. That was the ambition. I never really, at least when I was a teenager, knew what form that might take. But I was good at English and obviously I did French for A level. So I kind of knew it would involve journalism or writing or something of that nature.
Because it's quite interesting. You've got different dynamics in terms of what you do right now. So there's various different professions you've got. How did the photography stuff come professionally for you?
When I left university, I was always interested in the media. And I did a postgraduate diploma in broadcast journalism. And then I got a job as a trainee at the BBC. So that came about because I had been working as a secretary after I left university, just as a temp secretary at the BBC, which I managed to get because I did a secretarial qualification straight after I finished my A levels, and then I applied to the BBC to be a temp on their temp pool. Back then, lots of sort of the executives in the BBC had secretaries, which they don't anymore. So I was able to get in there, and then it was just this amazing experience of having access to, you know, the top executives in the BBC and seeing what they were doing, and I was just typing letters and, you know, and that kind of thing, doing data entry. But it was just such an exciting place to be. And I knew I wanted to work there. And I didn't really know how. I didn't really mind where. I just wanted to be in the BBC. So that's why I did the postgrad. That was a kind of news-based journalism one-year course. And at the end of that, I thought I wanted to become a news reporter. And I thought I had the idea that I would be a foreign correspondent and, you know, go off and chase the stories around the world. And that was what I wanted at that point. But I applied for this trainee scheme, which was in current affairs and factual documentaries, just because it was available. And, you know, you come out of a course and you're like, I'll just apply for everything. And And then I got it, which was amazing because it was extremely competitive. I think 6,000 people entered or tried to apply for six places or something like that. So I got on that, and then I was like, well, I can't turn this down. Mm-hmm. So I did that for a year. And once I was obviously inside the BBC, I was never interested. So when that year finished, I would just applied for other jobs internally and got them and stayed on for another 6 years. And then the BBC Now has sort of changed its system of hiring, you know, for freelancers. And it basically was in the process of trying to make everybody freelance. So they offered quite a generous redundancy package, which I took. And then I spent that money on a professional photography course and my first professional quality camera. And that was kind of where the photography started as a professional thing. Although for a long time, I wasn't making much money. I was selling the occasional photo on image libraries. That's been a very slow process of doing it for the love. But if you do something enough and you kind of, you know, I was entering competitions, which I then won, then people started to know who I was, you know, then I started networking and going to events and meeting people. And, you know, that's been a very slow thing. And I've been lucky that because I have the TV, you know, paying the bills, mm-hmm. I don't need to do the photography for the money. And so
are you talking about right now or back then?
Sorry. Well, back then as well. You know, I when I left the BBC, I went freelance as a documentary producer. Mm-hmm. So then I was doing, you know, this was 12 years ago now. I was doing exactly the same as I am now, which is working on contract basis. So production companies will get a commission with a channel. They'll say, okay, we're going to make six episodes of whatever this thing is. Mm-hmm. We need producers. And then I'll get a call. Am I available? Do I want to do it? And those jobs can be anything from a couple of weeks filling in for something or up to anything to about 6 months if you're taking the whole project from concept to delivery. And then in between, because, you know, you can never line them up, you know, immediately back to back, and you have to wait for the right one, mm-hmm. something you want to do or whatever's available. And also they're very, very intense. Those kind of projects, you get to the end, you just sort of fall off a cliff and all you want to do is sleep for a week. So I never want to take another one straight away. And then in those kind of gaps between contracts, that's when I would, you know, focus more on the photography and the blog, and I still do.
Take it back slightly. When you got into this position, because people listening will say it's a very tough industry to get in, and you said there was quite a few thousand people applying for the role, what made you stand out from the crowd, really? And you've obviously got something that someone doesn't have. So what is it that you think you've got that others don't have?
I was very lucky that I was able to travel before I applied. So by the time I applied for that role, I had my gap year. So I had traveled quite a lot in South America. So I had all those life experiences and the confidence that comes with having done that. I think travel is amazing for that kind of personal growth. Then I had my degree. I got a first. So, you know, I mean, they always like to look at the numbers. While at school, I did the school newspaper. While at university, I did the student newspaper and the student radio station. And then after I graduated from university, I took another gap year. I went to Ghana and I volunteered in a TV station and a radio station. So I did 6 months, 3 months in the TV station and 3 months in the
So you had all this background of work and experience beforehand. That's where it came.
Yeah. So when you're applying to the BBC, I could clearly demonstrate that I had the drive, I had the ambition, I had the passion, I had the experience, you know, and I had the confidence. So if you're just, you know, if I'm competing against people who've just, you know, done their A levels and their degree, and then they've just come and said, I want to be in telly, you know, they're not going to stand up against me when I can say I went to Ghana and I worked in a radio station.
Someone can't do what you've done and they still want to get into a field. Is there any sort of advice that you'd give them?
You absolutely don't need to go to Ghana. I mean, particularly now, with you know, podcasts and websites. And, you know, this is a very different world today from how it was when I was growing up, and we didn't have any of that stuff. But, you know, obviously what you have to do is prove that you can do it, and that you know, you don't have to be professional standard, but mm-hmm. you have to be able to show the passion and the drive and the determination and, you know, for all of that. So, you know, you have your own podcast, have your own website, have your own YouTube channel or TikTok or whatever, you know, all of that stuff. If you're, it was kind of similar when I started at, when I was working at Lonely Planet as a, mm-hmm. as a video producer there. And I went to my boss at Lonely Planet and I said, I can take photos and I can write. How do I get to photograph and write for Lonely Planet? And she said, where's the proof? Where's the evidence of what you do? Where's your travel blog? If you haven't got a travel blog, you're not serious. And I said, I better start a travel blog. And that's why I started my blog. You know, and she was absolutely right. You know, how can anyone believe me, or how can anyone know what you're capable of if you can't show them? So it's exactly the same. If you want to work in TV, get a YouTube channel.
I guess it's a different way of getting into a profession these days.
I don't know if I would succeed now. You know, it was a different time back then. And you know, I think it is still very hard to stand out from the crowd. Everybody's got a YouTube channel, you know. So, I mean, I don't, but, you know, but I think you don't have to necessarily travel across the world to do it. You can find stories in your own area, in your local area. You can, you know, but you need to have that, whatever that is, that kind of instinct, that kind of passion and drive to look for the stories and to create something and to go out and do it and not wait for opportunities to land in your lap, because they absolutely won't. They won't.
But would you say also networking is very key to that? Going to networking events?
I think, you know, for people starting out, I think that's much harder to get access to those kinds of things. Certainly for me, with the photography and the travel writing, networking has been absolutely the thing, because, you know, if I send a pitch and it lands cold in someone's inbox, they're a lot less likely to read it. And even if they read it, they don't know who I am. So they're less likely to commission me. But because I started entering competitions, and I was very lucky enough to get nominated 1 year, as well as a finalist for the Travel Media Awards in Best Photography in 2019. And then in 2020, I won it. So twice I was able to go to the event and meet people. And then I went, for example, this is something that people can do. And in fact, I did it yesterday. I went to a talk given by a photographer. I just go to these things because I'm interested and I want mm-hmm. to see how the photographers work. And I want to learn from, you know, people who are doing things differently. And, you know, and I just think they're interesting. And after the talk, everybody left, but I stayed behind and chatted to the photographer and the guy who was organizing the event. Like, you can do that. You know, it requires a bit of confidence, but, you know, that's how you network. You know, turn up to stuff and talk to people, and not everything is invite only. You can go and the ticket was free. So you do have to be in London for a lot of this stuff.
I don't live in London myself. I'm a London boy, but I don't live in London anymore. I feel as though sometimes I maybe miss out on a lot of stuff. But with virtual meetings now, or virtual events now, webinars, potentially that's opened up the door for others to get in. But do you have to be in the city, would you say? Was that one thing that you have to be?
I do think it helps. You don't have to be in London. There is, you know, Manchester is now becoming more and more of a media hub, or Glasgow. But I think London still is the main place, and it does help. And I know that that's hard, because obviously it's expensive to live in London. It's much, you know, you can go on webinars and learn stuff, but you can't approach the person afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, so that definitely does make it harder. But you can, you know, or you can reach out by email, or it's a lot easier to ignore people though when they send you an email.
It's fascinating to hear, because you've done so much and you've won. Congratulations on your awards, by the way. It's to get to that level. I mean, you must have some satisfaction in what you've done, or do you always feel as though you could always improve and do better and become more successful? Or do you eat it that way?
Yeah, I'm never satisfied. I'm always reaching for the next thing. So yes, I mean, obviously it's great, and I winning awards is wonderful, and I'm always very happy. You know, even just to get nominated and be a finalist is amazing. And I sort of when I get to that stage, then I'm normally like, I don't really mind if I win or not, even though obviously it's great to win, because just even being a finalist is really brilliant. But yeah. I'm always reaching for the next thing. So, you know, at the moment, for example, it's going to be like, what other publication can I get into? Or like, now I want to have a cover story, or, you know, that kind of thing. So,
but you've got longevity. You've had so many years in it. How do you keep it fresh? Because there's so much that changes over time. What keeps it going for you? What's the motivation behind your work?
Because there's always new stuff. Like there's a, you know, 100 countries in the world that I haven't visited yet. And we're not, I don't know. Anyway, I think the variety is the thing. And that's the beauty of doing what I do, having kind of multiple career streams, is that I'm never bored, ever. There's always so many things to do. My problem is more that there's too much choice. Like, do I take this TV job or do I not? Do I go traveling? If I go traveling, where? Because there's just a million places to go.
Well, that's a challenging aspect then, trying to pick and choose what's right for you, because you've got so much experience in these different fields.
I mean, yes, decision-making is the hardest thing. It's so hard for me. I'm not a good decision-maker, and because I'm on my own, there's nobody else's opinion to consider. So, which is great, because I can do what I want, but I want to do everything. So you know, even just when I was in Guatemala just now, and I had the choices of, do I stay in Guatemala longer, or do I go to Nicaragua or Honduras or Costa Rica, or do I come home? You know, all of these, they're all good choices, and they all open up doors to new opportunities. So you don't, any of them takes you down a different road, and it's like, which fork in the road do I take? And I don't know where they're going, but like, how do you choose? It's really, I find that really hard.
To get the success you've had in photography as well as filmmaking, you have to focus on one thing and then you have to focus on another. How have you managed that?
I mean, I think they are related. They're very similar disciplines in terms of, you know, storytelling, for example. It's all about dealing with people. It's about being interested in the world. It's about, you know, in telly, obviously, it's about the visuals as well. I used to shoot as a documentary maker. I used to also operate the camera. I don't anymore because it's exhausting, frankly. Yeah. Professional cameraman can do it a lot better than I can. But, you know, you're looking for shots and you're looking for angles in exactly the same way. And photo stories, you know, it's about meeting people and talking to people. And it requires very similar skill sets. And I think in a very real way, my photography skills helped improve me as a documentary maker, because I was, you know, I was looking for the shots and I knew how to frame it, you know, and how to tell a story through imagery. And then also the documentary experience has definitely helped me as a photographer and a travel writer. So I think maybe that's why I can do both.
When you travel to a lot of these places now, what is it that you look for when it comes to your travels? So people who have not seen you travel before or seen your work, what is it specifically that you look for?
Now it's a combination mainly of two things, which is, you know, where do I feel a kind of hankering for going? And there are certain places that I have on my list that I've just have always intrigued me, or have sounded like a place that I would love. I love nature, the outdoors, adventure and wildlife. So places where I can go and see wildlife are kind of top hitters for me. I really, really want to go to Botswana and Namibia, for example, because, you know, they just seem like really photogenic places. I think it's photogenic places, actually, that's the main draw for me. I mean, anywhere can be photogenic, but there are certain places in the world that, you know, where the light is beautiful. I mean, I went to Antarctica. I was very fortunate to go to Antarctica just before the pandemic. And, you know, clearly that's a place where everywhere you turn, there's another beautiful photograph. So that's kind of the main attraction for me, really. And that's why I went to Guatemala, because I kind of had seen some imagery, the colours and the people and the, you know, that kind of stuff. I just really wanted to take my camera and photograph. And also because it's a bit of a more unique destination. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm not going to be able to intrigue people with photographs if they've seen it. You know, if I go to Paris, everybody's like, well, I'm sure to Paris. I want to go to off the beaten track places, or places that people that are surprising, that people, so that people will be interested to see my photos.
You are a freelancer. You have to pitch a lot of these times. With your success, I'm sure people will look at you and look at your emails, but someone who's new to the sector and they're trying to pitch to editors, what advice would you give them?
Funnily enough, I actually, you know, I'm still learning about pitching, and I just listened to a seminar about pitching, a guide, pitching tips, which is really, you know, you have to be familiar with the publication that you're pitching to, because, you know, there's no point in pitching something that they're either that they've just published last week, or that they, you know, would never run. So what I tend to do is, you know, I've come back from Guatemala with loads of ideas and 12,000 photographs. And I'm now in the process of, you know, looking at the websites or the hard copies of, you know, the publications that I would like to pitch to, seeing what they've done recently, seeing what they typically do, and then trying to mold the content that I have to fit, you know, the stuff that they would publish. And then it's about, you know, getting your idea, you know, into a simple short paragraph with a headline. You know, you've got to make that they're all very, very busy.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to make their lives as easy as possible. You've got to do as much of the work for them as you possibly can, so that they can just see immediately what it is that you're offering and almost be like, right, I can just copy and paste that straight in, you know, then it's less work for them. So a nice headline, a nice catchy kind of pitch. And if you've never pitched before, they don't know you, you've got to make your pitch really engaging, because that's effectively a sample of your writing. Or, you know, with photography, it's slightly different, but more and more, they're going to want you to write at the very least captions for the photo.
Yeah.
So you do need to be able to, you know, sell your story in writing, even if at the end of the day, it's about the photography more.
Would an idea maybe also pitch before you go? Is that an option? Or do you just go to the places and then pitch to see if anyone's interested?
I did pitch before I went. And you can, if you're unknown, they're never going to commission you, you know, if before you go. That's the sort of thing that I, again, that's similarly, you were asking about ambitions, and that would be my next ambition, is to get the commission before I go, because I'm still only getting commissions after I get back and I can be like, look, here are the pictures. So that would be the next step for me. You can pitch before you go and you can let them know that you're going, and maybe, you know, they will give you a steer about the sorts of things that they might be interested in, so that you can focus. So for example, when I went to Guatemala, I had been in touch with National Geographic Traveller
mm-hmm.
before I went. We'd had a conversation about the sorts of things that they might be interested in. So I knew where to, you know, focus my attention. So I wasn't wasting my time photographing something they were never going to commission. But they wouldn't confirm the commission until, you know, I'd sent 400 images. And
it's a tough field. It sounds like you're doing a brilliant job. I'm sure there's going to be more success coming along the way. Before I move on to the last segment, the film documentary stuff, where do you want to take that to?
I'm a contractor. I quite often I compare it to having an extension built on your house, or having a house built. You know, I'm the project manager of the building, and then I'll, you know, work with the workmen to create the building, is effectively how it is.
Would you like your own production company within the filmmaking? Is that an ambition?
That sounds far too much stress and hard work. I mean, I with TV, I'm really very happy with where I am at the moment. Actually, I have, you know, the next stage for me, I'm a producer director. So if I wanted to, you know, the next rung up the ladder would be a series producer or an executive producer. But those roles don't involve being at the coalface. Once mm-hmm. you move away from being a producer director, you're a people, not you're a manager. I mean, you have a lot of creative input in the design of the show, but you're not going up to the locations and you're not working with the crews and you're not meeting the contributors. And that's the bit that I love, is the travel. And so, you know, from people my sort of level in my career, I've been in telly for 18 years now. Most of my kind of cohort of people that I grew up with, they're all series producers, executive producers, or channel commissioners now. And I, you know, I'm earning less than them, but I don't want to move up, because I like the creativity and I like the travel.
I know you said you're not where they are, but what you're doing, it sounds like you're very, very happy with your life.
Yeah, I definitely don't want to do what they're doing. I mean, a lot of people do it because, you know, after, you know, a time you get married, you have kids, you can't be traveling all the time, you know, have home responsibilities, and that, you know, you need a more of a desk-based position. But I don't have that. I don't have any of that, those encumbrances as I see them. So I've got the freedom to keep going. And I mean, really, just the stuff I've been doing for the last few years, I've been doing history, science, archaeology programs. I get to work with some really interesting people. I get to go to some really interesting places. I'm genuinely, so when I do take a project, I don't really do any of the other stuff. I'm just really focused on learning everything I can about the subject. And you know, I can work hours and hours and hours and not even notice, because I just, really interested in it, and I want to make the best product. When it's your name, you know, at the top of the credits, you know, it feels like a huge responsibility to not only, you know, do the best that you can do, but also, you know, do justice to the people whose story you're telling. So I tend to just do nothing but work, but I love it. So
where would you say one place that really transformed your life in terms of travel?
That's a hard one. I mean, nowhere has transformed my life. But, you know, I feel like the places where I spend a longer period of time, where you can really, you know, get stuck in. I think Uganda was a big turning point for me. I went in 2018 for 3.5 months, similarly to volunteer. I was volunteering as a sort of videographer and photographer for a charity in Kampala. And that was when I kind of really had the time to invest in the blog and the photography. And so I took a lot of time to do photography there and having 3 months to really get to know the place. When I came back, I've written probably 30 blog posts about Uganda, and I was able to work with the Ugandan Tourism Board while I was there. And I think, I'm not sure if some of the awards that I've won have been because of photos from Uganda, but certainly some of my content from Uganda has been published in other publications. So I think that from a blogging perspective was the kind of the trip that really raised the blog from just a kind of hobby level to something that where people would start to take me seriously.
I really admire the longevity that you've had, and you've kept it going. It's quite inspiring to hear your story. So thank you for telling us.
Thanks,
before I let you go, just tell everybody where they can find you and view all your work.
My blog is called passportandpixels.com. So you can Google Passport and Pixels and it'll pop up. I'm on Instagram at Passport and Pixels, A-N-D, and Twitter at Passport and Pix, just P-I-X, because it was too long otherwise. And if you go on Instagram, there's also a link tree, one of those link tree things with loads of links. So you can see some of my most recent documentary projects. I think you may need to be in the UK to be able to watch some of them.
Well, Bella, I wish you all the best for the future. Thank you so much for coming on, and I'll speak to you very soon.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
That's it for Take a Wonder with Shebs. Don't forget to follow me on all of my social media platforms. Until next time, bye for now.